So in a special episode today, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Person of Interest with me, Natalie Jones. We are in Mental Health Month still, but right now we're going to talk about cicadas. That's right. If you live in the tri-state area, you know cicadas are here. They're going to be here for the next couple weeks. They've been underground for 17 years. And actually, in Cincinnati, we're very lucky because the leading cicada entomologist in the nation lives here in Cincinnati. He's actually a doctor and a professor at the Mount St. Joseph University. And I'm going to talk to him about cicada stuff. And he's actually an author. He's written 10 books on entomology and science in general. A lot of those books are about cicadas. You can find him, let's see, at the Mount St. Joe website, also genekritzky.com. He also has an app that's gone live this year. I already have a download. It's called Cicada Safari, and we talk a lot about it. And, I do must say, oh, God, cicadas. In this episode, I talk about how excited I am that the cicadas are here. But now they are here, and they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy. I hope you guys are enjoying. I hope you're not scared of them. They are loving animals that we need in the world. And stay fly. Whatever it is you do today, make yourself proud. And if you like the podcast, like, subscribe, share, all those things. You know, download, do all that internet stuff with it. And love ya. Here is Dr. Gene Kritzky.
And they're really cute when they're small.
Are they?
Oh. And so they drop immediately to the ground. And what usually happens in cities, for example, they'll drop on the hit of blade, and they're now on grass. Mm-hmm. And they run immediately down the blade of grass. And between where the soil is and the grass, they can get into the dirt between that little crack.
Oh, that is so cool.
And they'll feed on grass roots for the next several weeks. And then on New Year's Day, which is now you know what to do on New Year's Day, they are 8 to 12 inches below the surface sucking on a tree root.
And then they stay there for 17 years?
Yep. And they're feeding on tree roots. They're tunneling around, feeding on various tree roots, molting. They'll molt four times underground. And then by the time they're 13 years, for a 17-year cicada, when they're 13 years old, they're already at the same size they are now as they're coming out of the ground 4 years later. They don't molt it, but they still have some physiological development to do internally and things like that. So, but they're not sleeping. They're not dormant. They're not in hibernation. It's about 56 degrees where they are. So it's not, they're not moving, they're not like zipping around. Like.
Okay, I'm picturing like an ant farm under the ground, but just with cicadas in it. And that's not how it is?
No, it's a single little narrow little tube.
Oh, so they're kind of, so they're alone?
Usually, yeah.
Wow.
So there might be a cicada a couple inches away, but there's no evidence that they're not talking to one another.
Oh, gotcha. They're just hanging out. Okay. Yeah. Have you eaten cicadas? We got to talk about it.
Yes.
Can we eat them?
You can eat them.
And can we eat too many to where it's going to hurt us?
Well, it's not the mess. Well, I don't eat them anymore. I ate my cicadas in 1987.
Okay. I've eaten a couple myself.
It's not a flavor I thoroughly enjoyed when you ate them, but what did you think?
I remember it not tasting like very much anything.
Yeah, that's really the...
Well, it was not alive, though. It was dead.
It was dead?
It didn't really taste like too much. It tasted like a bug, I guess. I don't know. No,
I've had them blanched. I've had them stir fried. I've had them battered and deep fat fried and things like that.
And what do you prefer?
I don't prefer any of them anymore. Because you got to remember, cicadas got me tenure.
Oh, so you don't want to? Okay, do you eat? Okay, I get it.
No, I eat their relatives. Crabs, lobsters, shrimps, things. I'm not into...
Wait, so then, interestingly enough, how do you feel about the whole wave of veganism eating bugs maybe the foreseeable future? And would cicadas be a part of that? How do you feel about that?
Well, cicadas will never be a sustainable commodity. They only come out once every 17 years
but
in
they
big
still,
numbers.
But there are like chefs who are making, obviously like special cicada dishes or whatnot, but cicadas aren't insects. And if they are edible, then just by default, and then they're a part of that wave. How do you feel about eating bugs in general?
Well, I don't mind about eating bugs. I've eaten a lot of them. When Justin and I were down in Mexico with our friends Mike and Mark, we went to a little street cafe sort of thing in Hidalgo province. And there was a guy selling ant egg tacos and grasshopper tacos and agave caterpillar tacos and mesquite bug tacos. And I had an ant egg taco, and then I tried all the other bugs as well. And I found it quite interesting. It was quite tasty. It was especially the mesquite bugs. These are things that are in the same order as cicadas. They're spiced up so much that they're very much like a like a soft, chewable corn nut.
Yeah.
You know, you can break your teeth on corn nuts.
Corn nut is a really good way to put it, yeah.
You know, corn nuts can break your teeth on these things, but those things are nice and pleasant. Often the problem is they're so popular and they're collected wild, they're getting quite scarce. So,
wow. But they are being farm-raised in some, anyway, in some other places in the world, too.
Hopefully, yeah.
Eating bugs is the future.
And then we went to Zafiro's, I think is how you pronounce it. It's a wonderful culinary institute in Mexico City where they train chefs and waiters, and went there for this wonderful lunch. And the salad came up with this wonderful hummus in a little pyramidal shape. And delicately balanced on the top was a deep-fried agave caterpillar.
Oh, my
God. Just balancing there.
That's
and those
so
are
cool.
Wonderful. Those taste like dry roasted sunflower seeds.
Oh, cool.
And so.
Good to know. Okay. Can I ask you some just like day-to-day questions then?
Sure.
So are bugs, are cicadas going to hurt our dogs if our dogs eat the cicadas?
Not if they eat one or two. If they're the type of dog that will gorge themselves on so much stuff and they don't know when to stop.
Yes.
Then that could lead to a bowel obstruction because the exoskeleton, the outer portion of the thing is not digestible. So if it gets compacted in there, it's not fun for you or the dog.
Are cicadas going to injure any plants? Should we worry about them taking over?
They're not going to hurt your garden, your flower garden, your vegetable garden. The only damage that cicadas do is to when the female lays her eggs in the ends of the branches, and that can sometimes tear up the vascular tissue, and that causes the leaves to dry out, wilt, they'll turn brown, and sometimes in a wind that portion is weak enough that it'll actually drop and they'll sort of dangle there. So it's called flagging.
Okay,
and that will look ugly, but in many cases, it will lead to more flower sets the next year because it's like a natural pruning.
Oh, great.
And so it looks ugly this year, but next year there'll be a better, there should be a better flower set. Now, if it's a small tree that you just planted 4 feet shorter, that's a concern. If you haven't, if you're thinking about planting some new trees this year, it'd be best if you could wait until the latter half of June when the cicadas are dwindling in numbers so that you don't, because they can, they can come out in numbers. If there's a lot of them and there's competition for egg-laying space, they will oviposit in a young tree like that.
Okay. How come there are some places, I don't know, like, is there anything that would make a cicada hang out in a certain tree or part of a yard than another one? You know,
it's usually other cicadas.
They're
starting to come out now all over the city. The big emergence, the massive emergence hasn't started. And that'll probably start with the next 48 hours.
Yeah.
There's no,
cool.
And because we're seeing more and more reports, and it's going to hit the 80s tomorrow.
Okay.
And it's going to warm up today. There'll probably be more tonight yet. And so we're looking forward to this. You know, it's going to be
so excited?
Oh, it's the anticipation. You know, it's been like, is it going to happen? Are we going to have them? This heat, this is in April. This heat is going to speed them up. This cold is going to slow them down.
Yeah.
So it's what happens. And so we're ready for it.
Do you think is because they're coming out a little bit later, do you think they're going to be, is that going to affect them, like how they're going to, like how their time with us above the ground?
No, the clock starts when they come out in their big numbers. That marks 6 weeks. So we'll have 6 weeks from then. So that could start, in some places it's already started. Where they've come out in those two or three pockets where they came up big numbers. But in most cases, it's going to start probably the next 2-3 days. And then it'll be 6 weeks because it takes 2 full weeks for all the cicadas to come out.
Okay.
And that's because, let's say you have a tree on a slight hill and it's facing south. The south side of that tree is going to get warmer on that part as well than on the north side. Mm-hmm. And I had a student do a project with me several years ago where we took the temperature all around several trees on south-facing slopes, north slopes, flat slopes, and all this kind of stuff. And it took 2 full weeks for all of them to come out because on the north side of that hill, they have trees that don't have that southern exposure.
Yeah.
And their soil is going to be a little delayed. And it's going to require more air temperature as opposed to just having the sunlight help warm it up. And so it's about a two-week period where all the cicadas come out. You'll still find one or two emerging here and there. But that's when, by that time, we should have it completed, unless we had a drizzly day. Back in 2008, we had 2 days where it was misty and cloudy, and the cicadas came out 24, came out over the 24 hours for those 2 days.
Wow.
And the duration of that of the emergence of new cicadas and transforming was about 5 days shorter. They all came out, but they came out during the day because it seemed like it might have been a good time, and there was still not the temperature didn't get warm again, right?
So does that happen often? That's crazy.
We got to remember cicadas are insects of climate.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1940, for example, here in Cincinnati, they didn't start emerging until June the 5th, but it was really cold in May in 1940.
Mm.
And so it all depends what's been happening. So
how long have cicadas, you say cicadas, they're like shellfish, so they've been around for a really long time. Like,
well, we know that the family Cicadidae goes back into the Mesozoic. In fact, a colleague of mine, George Pernar at Oregon State, he and I described the oldest fossil cicada, a 110 million year old nymph that crawled out of a tree in the mid late Cretaceous, and it dropped to the ground into some sap and was preserved in Burmese amber,
just like in Jurassic Park. Yeah.
And so I find a lot of solace in knowing that the when the ancestor of the Tyrannosaurs were walking around that part of the world at that time, there were cicadas screaming in the trees.
Oh, that's so cool. So when they're screaming in the trees, that is their mating call.
Yes.
Right? That's their version of peacocking, huh?
If that's how you put it, yes.
So when they come up and they're, when they come out of the ground, what is their purpose? What are they?
Well, the purpose of everything is just to reproduce.
Okay. And then do they have any sort of after, because then they're all going to reproduce, and then is it the males that die? So how many die? And who?
After the eggs are laid, they all die. It's
all of them die.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's to paraphrase a song. It's wham bam, thank you ma'am, and now it's time to die.
Yeah. Okay. So what advice do you have for people who are scared of cicadas? Who are scared of? They just don't like bugs at all. And there are some people who are like terrified. And some mm-hmm. people feel the same way about like spiders as they do cicadas. And they're like, I just can't even. I'm not one of those people. I embrace the cicadas. I like them a lot. Well, what advice can you give people who are terrified?
Well, they should face their fears.
It's
and the way you do it, is to go to the Google Play or the Apple App Store and download my free app.
Oh, the Cicada Safari.
Cicada Safari, which this morning will hit 130,000 downloads.
Ooh, I have it downloaded on my phone.
Excellent, excellent. And what you do is once you get that downloaded, you go on your own Cicada Safari.
Wow. And, okay, so what happens in this app?
What the app is designed by our Center for IT Engagement at Mount mm-hmm. St. Joseph University, and it's students actually helped me design this thing.
Really? It's great. What I love about this app is that it's very simple and it's easy to navigate.
That's the key. Mm-hmm. What we wanted to do was, well, crowdsourcing periodical cicadas goes back to the 1840s.
Oh.
When a man by the name of Gideon B. Smith was writing articles for newspapers and sending them off saying, I expect the locust, what they call them at the time, to emerge mm-hmm. in your part of the country. I'd appreciate if your readers send me notice of this. And and he, by the time he died in 1867, he had documented every known brood.
Whoa!
Not the full distribution, but that we had those broods here.
So what's cool about this is that you can take a picture of a cicada, and then what happens?
You submit it.
Okay.
It comes into our folder, and I have 20 colleagues who are helping us identify them, and I made the comment in an interview about 3 months ago. We're hoping to be overwhelmed.
You will be.
We are exceeding.
Awesome. Already, huh?
Sunday, alone on Sunday, we received 20,000 photographs.
Whoa!
We were hoping to get 50,000. We've already
just in the tri-state area?
No, from all over the eastern. Remember, Brood 10 is coming out over 17 states have reported Brood 10 cicadas or cicadas coming out this year.
Yeah.
And we've got, and it was really neat. If you look at the map,
yeah.
The map shows, there you go. There's also a live map on the very bottom. As you can see, there's a little thing that says map down the bottom menu.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That takes you to where they are right now. And down at the very bottom of the screen. Not you have to scroll down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It just says map.
There we go. There's the interactive and
it's
map.
It turns out we've got thousands in there, so it's going to take a second to load that up. But
this is so cool. Oh my goodness.
But you can,
you know what, to listeners, this app is similar to like the shark tracking apps that you can download and you can see where the sharks are swimming. It's like the same thing. So for instance, in Cincinnati, currently there are 1,468 photos that have been taken. So I can click on this.
Well, you can actually go, you have to zoom in because it's going to break it down into even smaller neighborhoods. And by the time you're through, you'll see exactly where the thing was, where that photograph came.
Wow.
If you touch that again, it'll show you the photograph.
Wow. Okay. So you can go deep down into it. This is cool. Definitely, definitely, definitely worth.
It's free.
It's free and it's definitely worth downloading. You know, the last time this cicadas came out, there where we didn't have this kind of technology.
Of course. Yeah. That was. This has been great. I started here in 87. I had a hotline. The cicada hotline at Mount St. Joe. And the morning after the cicadas came out, the calls were so intense the tape got jammed and broke the machine.
No way.
So,
well, I mean, I'm not surprised.
So technology moves forward to 2004, and I'm getting emails. And then instead of breaking our internet, I had an email a minute for the working hours of the day. But that's still 600 emails that day.
I mean, wow. Well, I mean, you have 7 interviews today. But hold on, let me tell you. So when the last time the cicadas were out, I was a freshman in college, mm-hmm. and I lived in Clifton. It's right up the hill here.
Okay.
And my roommate and I went everywhere together. And every time we would turn a corner to get to our car, there was always so many cicadas on this one tree. So we would protect ourselves with our racquetball rackets, and we would just head off to our car and start swinging. And we would always capture about like 5 each every single time. So I'm sorry that we killed so many. I won't do that again this year.
That's okay. I forgive you. I can do that about St. Joe.
Okay. no, but it was overwhelming and just like all the dead cicadas on your car and everything. So this is exciting. So what advice can you give to people? So download
the app. Go on your own cicada safari. Better, even better yet, if you've got kids, take them along.
Yes, and let the kids get into it. They're not going to get injured. Everything's going to be fine.
If you go out to, maybe not tonight, but tomorrow night or the next night, with cicadas, you're going to see them crawling out of the ground after dark. They're going to be crawling up a tree.
Okay.
You'll watch them transform into an adult, which is amazing. The little brown nymph, there'll be a split across his back, and then the white adult comes wriggling out of this thing.
That happens? We can see that happen?
It happens. It takes about 2.5 hours for all this to take place. So it's you can watch it go in and get your favorite libation and then come back out. It's that thing.
This is so cool. I didn't know that.
It's gonna happen not once or twice, but for everyone that you see coming out of the ground, it's going to happen for each one of them. So you can have your trees covered with these things.
Oh, my gosh.
And you can take photographs, of course, for Cicada Safari at that time. But get there, watch. Because, you know, you're out. It's after dark. You got a flashlight.
Yeah.
Limited peripheral vision. You're all focused on this thing. You're quiet because you not know what's going to happen. And it just unfolds. It's like having David Attenborough in your backyard with showing you this thing. It takes an hour and a half for it to pull itself out of the shell and form what looks like a good-looking cicada, except it hasn't darkened it. It's all white. And the
white cicada is what I really want to see.
Yeah. And then they will, after about another hour and a half or so more, they'll turn into the dark black cicada with the red eyes. And
the red eyes, I think, are really what scares people. Their size, they're pure size. They are clunky. They have a big brute size. And I think it's the red eyes that freaks people out. Wings are big, too.
Yeah. But now, if you're inclined to want to eat them, you want to collect them when they're white.
Okay.
Because otherwise it's like eating the little part of the shrimp that you hold onto to dip the shrimp.
Yeah.
It's like that parchment like stuff. Mm. It's just going to pass through you. So that's not a lot of fun.
That's
you
also the ones I've eaten.
You have to learn
like
how
that.
To separate the males from the females because you want to eat the females because they're full of eggs.
How do you don't want to eat the females because they're full of
eggs?
No,
you want to do it. If you want to eat them. That's where you get most of the flavor.
The larvae are good?
They're
like little beetles.
There's more nutrition there.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. So how can you tell the difference between a male and a female?
You have to look at the naughty bits.
Okay, and those are on like the...
There's a photograph on the app. As you scroll down, there's a picture of the three of them there.
Yeah.
The one in the middle is female.
Oh, yep. It's no, you're gonna see it right away.
Yeah. And the other two on the right, left.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
And that's because we have three different species emerging simultaneously with three different calls.
Is there an insemination process similar to, that of what we are, Homo sapiens? So
they have a physical copulation. There's a picture of that in there, too.
Of the white guy getting on the other one?
No, of the.
Butt to butt. Okay.
Yep. And so that takes several hours. And then... the female will start laying her eggs. There's a picture of a female on there laying eggs as well.
How long does that take?
Oh, but we're talking about mating could last several hours. She'll probably lay her eggs in the next 1 to 2 days.
Gotcha.
And she'll continue to lay her eggs until she exhausts her supply of eggs of a little over 500.
Wow. And then she dies.
And then she dies.
Then she dies.
She might live a day or two, but then she'll drop to the ground and they'll start collecting around your trees. And then they get them a little wet, get a nice June, July heat going there, and they'll stink to high heaven.
Wow. And then they'll go back into the earth. It's all part of the circle of life.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, this is great.
But as of today,
I'm very excited. This app, everybody, I'm nerding out on this app right now. I'm very excited about this. As of today, so today is May 18th, 2021, and they should be emerging here in the next 48 hours.
Yep. Yep. Wow. So, and the neat thing about it is you get your kids involved with the app, go out there, because this is the kind of thing that can get kids excited about natural history and science.
Yeah.
And who knows, you may have a future doctor in the family.
Yeah. For sure.
That'd be good. That'd be a nice healthcare prize, wouldn't it?
And you know, to piggyback on that, the Children's Museum at the Museum Center is opening July 1st, everybody. So you can take your kids to the Children's Museum there. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. Were you into bugs when you were a kid?
Yes. Not as much as I was into dinosaurs and fossils, but I was into almost, you know, my interest is like a natural history museum. I started with dinosaurs. I got into Egyptology really big. I used to live in Egypt. I was a Fulbright scholar at Egypt.
Wow, read that. So Egyptology is a science?
Egyptology, yes.
Okay.
It's part of archaeology, and there's a scientific method behind it and what have you. And I've taken student groups back to Egypt 4 times since I've been here. I've written a book called The Tears of Ray, Beekeeping of Ancient Egypt, which published by Oxford University Press.
Wow.
And that's just a lot of fun. I'm itching to go back. I mean, I've got to go. There are a couple tombs that I need to see.
Really?
But I've been to hundreds of them. But I was living there. I visited 94 archaeological sites and just try to get as much data as I can.
Crazy. Have you been on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Yet?
I'm sorry?
Have you been on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Yet?
Not yet.
Okay. I'm like, that feels like that needs to happen for you. I don't know why you are not yet. My goodness.
They might. Who knows? If they want somebody on cicadas, we can do that. But then I went from dinosaurs into I remember as a kid collecting this giant stag beetle, which is a beetle about yay so big, and getting really amazed at that.
All right. It's like 3 inches big.
Yeah.
It's huge. Continue. Yep.
So it's a, and that with that, that that's where that I had a telescope, I had a microscope, I had a geology kit, I had a chemistry set. I was a nerd.
That's how you know it's something different, is when you are a child and you capture a 3-inch-long beetle that's that big and you're not grossed out by it or scared, and you're just interested, and you put it under a microscope. Ooh, that would scare the lights out of me.
And I was fortunate to have parents, my mom in particular, for example. I remember when I got a little toy dinosaur in Fruit's Corn Chip, I said, "What is that?" She said, "That's a dinosaur." And I said, "What is that?" She said, "Look it up.
Is it a long neck? So what was it?"
It's a small T-Rex. I still have this thing.
Ah.
And so I went to my version of Google back in 1962, the World Book Encyclopedia. Opened it up to Dina. And that was it. Astronomy. I love astronomy. I love to take photos. I love to photograph comets even to this day. I do that. I have a telescope that I got when I was 10, the first one, and it just keeps going from it. That's what I wanted to do, and I just never thought anything different.
Wow. We could talk about so much more. I'm like, thank you very much for the cicada talk.
Certainly.
You are the cicada master. There is no one else. I think you are the leading man in cicadas here nationwide, and we're very lucky to have you here in Cincinnati.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you very much for taking us this time. And I'll stop the podcast there, but off the record. So how do you feel? So if you like looking at, how do you feel about SpaceX stuff and everything that's happening there in the future?
I'd love to go up there.
Putting our future. You're going to go to Mars?
I don't know if I want to go to Mars. I don't know if I could take that kind of confinement for that long to get there. I'd go to the moon without a problem with anything like that. But
how do you ever watch are you a documentary guy at all?
Yeah.
I used to work for the Mountain Film Festival out of Telluride, Colorado. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we do. It's a environmental documentary film festival. And so obviously the science is like a lot of things around science. And I'm not a science gal, you know, but I just learned a lot about it just from being a part of it, you know. And how do you feel about, with all of your just expertise in life, about renewable energy? And if you could pick one avenue to trust moving forward? Which one would you trust?
Well, when you say trust, it's clear that
which one do you have confidence in?
Well, they all do the same. Whether you're talking about wind or solar, it's
which one do you think would be the most beneficial?
Probably solar.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you've been up the mountain really recently, but the Sisters of Charity built a massive solar panel system.
No, I've actually never been on. But it's been a long time.
And so they're showing it's practical. They're actually selling electricity back. And the idea now, it's difficult here because you have to look at what's the percentage of days that you're going to have clear weather on average.
Mm-hmm.
But as in this tabella, as long as temperatures are continuing to rise, that's going to be more and more and more.
Yeah.
It can shift back. These things can happen if we can help things. That could change where we'd have more rain. That might make it less profitable. Wind, we're not like the plains. I'm originally from North Dakota.
Mm.
And so wind farms out there are very profitable.
Yeah.
And, it costs $1 million to put a wind in it. And they'll generate about $1 million a year in electricity. And they have about a 10-year life. So if you can get the funding to get the first one up there,
mm-hmm.
and know your maintenance costs, you can do pretty well over the long run with just one.
Yeah. But wind to me seems like there's too much labor that goes into. They're too labor intensive and too expensive, and you don't get as much return.
They will drop it, but that's here in the Midwest. I don't think it is. Now, if you drive up from here to Chicago, you can see several wind farms in mm-hmm. Northwest Indiana, for example, where things have been clear. But out in the Dakotas and Montana, where you can have literally, I've seen wind farms of 50, 60 windmills out there.
Yeah.
That's quite a thing just to see, but again, that environment's conducive for it.
Yeah.
And so they're going.
How do you feel about nuclear energy?
It never really bothered me as much as a lot of other people over time, but I am half Ukrainian, and mm-hmm. Chernobyl nearly showed what we're humans.
Yeah.
And humans screw up.
Yeah.
And so the question is, it's okay if it screws up over there, but when it's in your backyard, that's the concern.
Exactly.
I think, the idea that wouldn't it be great if we had a paint and your whole surface of your car could be like your solar collector that turns that into electricity to power your electric car. So while it's parked outside in the summer, it's regenerating itself. I mean, there are things like that are going on that we're just beginning to think about and talk about.
I know. Can't we just put solar panels on our cars then?
Oh, we can, but it'd be cheaper if we do it with paint.
It's true. Well, how do you make?
I know. Apple was looking at this a few years ago able to power your iPad, your Mac with just being outside in the house with the lights on. It doesn't generate a lot in those conditions, but it's not losing any.
I mean, they have this solar panel, like the portable solar panel chargers and everything.
Oh yeah, in fact,
they don't work very well though.
Well, in parts of Africa where they don't have electricity, they work really well.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's enough to charge your cell phone during the day.
Yeah, it's enough to clean water too. Crazy.
So it's. What about you? You ready to go to space? Will you go?
Yes. Yeah.
What's your energy fantasy?
Well, I would just say I think. I don't really know which one is best yet. I don't know if we do know. I'm open to all of them. I'm not an expert in any and any renewable energy. I think that we need to figure it out sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure. And
I mean, even because they're all tied to the same thing. Wind and solar and waves.
I was going to say water.
We haven't talked about wave action.
So water. I was recently in Alaska, and I met a man named Bernie Carl. He was using geothermal engineering,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing this project on Unalaska, which he invited me to stay for 5 days to document it, but I had to come back to work. But where he's like, his goal is by the end of this year to have 2023 to have this entire island 100% off the grid with renewable energy, and he's doing it all just thermal, and now he's like runs a bunch of stuff. I mean, he's doing it. He's successful thus far. He's been like the most recent project that I've seen that's been really, really impressive. And by a man who started in oil. So now instead of drilling for oil, he's just drilling for another energy source. And by all of the context clues, by everything, I think he's pretty conservative too. So to see a conservative guy go into renewable energy, even if he's only doing it to make money, whatever. I think it's renewable energy.
I mean, that's so how it's going to come about. If you can make money at it, that's how it's going to happen.
Exactly.
So,
right?
Yeah.
Well, that's about it. You know, thank you so much for coming in, Gene.
No, I can do these, but I got to.
I mean, isn't that refreshing to hear someone get so excited about something that creeps so many people out? Bugs are beautiful and bugs are part of the world. So thank you very much, Gene Krinsky. Again, you can find him at GeneKrinsky.com. That's K-R-I-T-S-K-Y, Dr. Gene, G-E-N-E, Krinsky. He's also a professor at Mount St. Joe. He's amazing. You know, he's a great guy. We had so much fun here, and I would love to have him back because after this, we nerded out about climate change and environmental studies, and oh, he's just great. So we are bouncing back to Mental Health Awareness Month coming up in the next few episodes, and I hope you guys have a great day. Again, like, subscribe, do all that fancy stuff. And whatever it is you do today, make yourself proud, babes.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.